morning. It's Mike Mullins, the host of the Socially Responsible Investing Show, here with you once again. And today our guest is Lynn Patterson. She is the Director of Corporate Responsibility for RBC. Now, I am a financial consultant with RBC Wealth Management here in Minneapolis. And Lynn is in Toronto. Good morning, Lynn.
Good morning. How are you doing, Mike?
Fine. Lynn oversees the company's global corporate responsibility strategy, including programs, communications, and reporting. And I'll say you have been the managing editor of RBC's annual Corporate Responsibility Report since 1999, and you oversee the company's sustainability reporting. One thing I like here is you're the speechwriter for the company's CEO, my boss's boss. And is one of the company, and you are one of the company's subject matter specialists on diversity, economic prosperity, environmental sustainability, and sustainability reporting. You know, sometimes in the verbiage in any industry, including this one, gets to be kind of thick, and I want to try to do some definitional stuff here, if I could. This show is about investing. A lot of times we try to talk about the story behind the headlines as seen through the lens of socially responsible investing. There was a recent column in an industry magazine that caught my interest. I want to share with you some of the author's thoughts about socially responsible investing and how it hooks up with today's topic. And today's topic is corporate social responsibility. This column was in a May 2010 magazine here. In the beginning, the word was SRI, and it meant socially responsible investing. We can trace the beginning back centuries to biblical times when Jewish law laid down directives about investing ethically. John Wesley, the founder of Methodism, writing in the mid-1700s, considered the use of money as the second most important subject of the New Testament. The Methodist Church in the United States has been managing money using what we now call SRI, or ESG criteria, for more than 200 years. Now, this is a columnist that's writing this. This is his opinion, his thoughts, all right? Going on, the modern roots of the responsible investing phenomenon can be traced back to the impassioned political climate of the 1960s and 1970s, when investors began avoiding companies based on involvement in weapons manufacturing and environmental pollution. The Vietnam War, the struggle for civil rights, the Bhopal, Chernobyl, and Exxon Valdez incidents, to name just a few. Now, this was written in May, so BP hadn't happened yet. All served to raise awareness around money and its impact on the world. People began connecting the dots between business and environmental degradation, and investors began to be more aware of the impact their money has in the world. In 1994, Nelson Mandela visited the U.S. and thanked investors for helping to dismantle the system of racial apartheid in South Africa. That great victory, along with countless smaller engagements in which investors worked successfully to improve the behavior of companies, began to etch an important idea into our cultural consciousness, that investors can do good and do well at the same time. Could the race to save our planetary life support systems cease our dependence on imported oil and ensure that our quality of life will not only endure but thrive, be our next space race? Could the Obama administration's efforts to create a new energy economy be as powerful and impactful as the rise of the personal computer in the 1980s or the explosion of the World Wide Web in the 1990s? This author thinks it's possible. One thing is certain, he says, the rank of responsible investors, those who want their money working to simultaneously make money and to help transform the world in a very positive way, are growing. And the emphasis is shifting from avoiding companies that are doing harmful things to seeking out companies that are finding sustainability to be a competitive advantage. Today, SRI means sustainable and responsible investing. Well, I think this is a very intriguing description, and I like it a lot. Companies a lot of times have a different idea of what this means and what it means to be responsible and what it means to be sustainable. And we wonder as investors, what difference does it make anyway? Lynn, what do you think? What do consumers say matters to them?
Well, wow, those are some big questions. And I got to say, the overview that author gave is really, really a good history of responsible investing. And your comment right off the top that you kind of get bogged down in the verbiage, that's absolutely true. People talk about citizenship and sustainability and corporate responsibility and social responsible investing, and it almost feels like too much to absorb all of those terms. But what do customers value? I would say that's the similar kind of things that what are investors valuing at this point. Customers, and I've got some research sitting here in front of me, really say they want to deal with a company that behaves well. And in Canada, we've got some research right now that says that consumers really care about dealing with an honest and well-managed and responsible company. And the fact that if you've got business integrity, that matters a lot. I think this has to do with the outcome of the economic crisis of the last couple of years. So business integrity absolutely is the key I think.
And just a comment, and I think a lot of times people view what they buy, what kinds of car they buy, what kind of dog food they buy, where they shop, what kind of fast food they eat, what kind of fresh vegetables they eat, for that matter. And they disconnect that from the idea that somehow or another their investments and the companies that make those products and offer those services are not connected, but they are.
Yeah, you're right. And sometimes there is a disconnect between what we do as consumers and what we do as investors. And it might be because the investment world is complicated. There's a lot to read. There's a lot to understand. But you feel as though you can actually make an ethical decision as an individual consumer by where you spend your money. And the way people feel about what they buy, folks almost feel as though this is an expression of who they are as a person as well. That we've got some research that shows employees say that they feel bad, or that they feel like their own personal reputation suffer if they work for a company that their friends think is a bad company. That kind of feeling that where you work and where you purchase stuff is an expression of your personality or your individual ethics. It's very strong right now.
That's an interesting connection. The more I think about this, the more I think, you know, this is not a two-dimensional world, you know, where you're sitting watching TV and and the TV is doing what the TV does with absolutely no input from you except to turn on the channel. Mm-hmm. And you sit there and you watch it or you don't watch it. But really, the world is far, far more interactive, and really always has been to some degree, than you think. Now, one of the things that a few weeks ago, Lynn, you were on the show with John Taft, who was the CEO of RBC U.S. Wealth Management, and also Peter Gove, who was a director with the Friends of the Mississippi River. And on that show, we talked about RBC's Blue Water Project. I guess that was 4 weeks ago now, or 5 weeks ago. Oh, by the way, thanks again for agreeing to be on the show again. I think what you have to offer is very, very specific and insightful to the topic of socially responsible investing. But anyway, back then, John Taft said that there were four pillars that RBC uses to talk about being a good corporate citizen, and they were responsibility to customers, obviously, responsibility to the environment, hence the Blue Water Project, responsibility to the community, and RBC is in, I want to say, 54 countries, I believe.
Yep.
And all over the world, obviously, besides Canada and the United States. And the fourth one is a responsibility to be a good steward for employees. Now, most of us, hopefully all of you listening, have a job, and you work for a specific company or two or three, but let's just say there's a main one. You know, as a consumer, you make choices about what to buy, and a lot of times it's based on value. What's the most bang you can get for your buck? That's great. That's just careful shopping. Where you work should also have some impact beyond who's going to pay me the most, or how close is it to my home, or can I get the hours I want or the flexibility I want. Those are all important decisions. But it's really important to remember that companies have employees. And how the employees feel about the company they work for, as you were just mentioning, Lynn, is very important. Could you comment on that?
Yeah, it is really, really important, and increasingly important as well, especially with the 18 to 24 generation. We're finding that those folks want to work for companies that have a good, strong record as a good corporate citizen, and especially when it comes to environmental sustainability. They also don't seem to want to work for companies that are perceived as sin stock companies.
Mm-hmm.
So tobacco, arms. I'm not sure if this replicates. This information is similar in the United States, but you know, tobacco companies have a hard time attracting employees.
I don't know that. That's an interesting question,
yeah.
Though.
Yeah. We also did some research last year with our employees of what were they proudest of our company, and ethical business practice was head and shoulders above everything else that employees said. I mean, giving money to charity and giving employees time off to volunteer. That's pretty important, but boy, do they want to work for a company that's got good, strong business practices that express integrity. They want to be proud of the way the company operates. Really more about how a company makes its money than how a company spends its money. That's actually one of my definitions of corporate responsibility. It's about how a company makes its money.
Make a note of that. That's an excellent view.
Mm-hmm.
How it makes its money is more important than how it spends its money.
Yeah, anybody, any company can can give donations, and most companies do. But really, what we're finding that investors are looking at, and NGOs, non-government organizations, mm-hmm. environmental, and mm-hmm. employees as well, they're looking at, well, how is this company run, and what kind of product are they making, and is it a product that I feel safe buying and using and eating and driving?
Mm-hmm.
How does this company treat its employees? Does this company leave its lights on all night long, or is it dumping garbage into the lake, local river, or is the company promoting women or people with that are invisible minorities?
Mm-hmm.
These are all sorts of drivers that employees and investors are looking at.
I think when we come back in this next segment, we'll focus on that. I'm going to ask you, what are the most important things a company can do to show that it's responsible? And you've just mentioned several things, and I think we could expand on that a bit more. Lynn, thanks for being here today, and we'll do another segment here. And everybody stay with us. We'll be right back. Mike Mullins, host of the Socially Responsible Investing Show, back with you with our guest, Lynn Patterson, Director of Corporate Responsibility for RBC Wealth Management in Toronto. Thanks for being with us, Lynn. All right. Lynn, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Hi. Thanks. I just thanked you for being with us, and then I found out that you weren't.
Oh.
So, hi. Thanks for being with us, Lynn. We're back.
I'm totally here and ready to talk. It's one of my favorite topics.
Outstanding. What's your favorite topic?
This is corporate responsibility.
Okay, all right. As I was mentioning before we took the first break, I wanted to ask you the question, what we're talking about, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, is corporate social responsibility. We're talking about making connecting the dots, if you will, between the investments that you make, the investments you already have, and the companies that issue those stocks and bonds, and trying to make some distinctions and decisions about which companies to own. Now, many of you are not individual stockholders. You own mutual funds. Many of you have 401ks, 403bs, other retirement plans and the like, annuities, variable annuities, where you have kind of mutual fund types of choices, collections of stocks and perhaps bonds that other people manage, an investment company manages. And I've talked a lot lately about exchange-traded funds. We had a show, actually, a replay last week that you may have heard back from June 5 as well, where we talked about what exchange-traded funds are and how great they are. And the most important thing about them is that you can see underneath the hood every day as to what's actually in the portfolio, as opposed to mutual funds, which don't have a reporting commitment to let you know what's in them on a daily basis. They have to let you know what was in it 6 months ago, but that doesn't help a lot if you're trying to monitor your investments. So what we're looking for here is we're looking for good corporate citizens, companies that are making a significant effort, a recognizable effort, to do better things in the world. And so what are the most important things that a company can do, Lynn, to show that it's responsible?
Well, one of the things that I would look at, I guess, as a consumer or as an investor is to take a look at a range of indicators with a company, because you can have a company that's really good in one area and not so good in other areas. So I would look for a company that's firing on five key cylinders. I want to make sure that I'm dealing with a company that's really operating the business with integrity.
Okay, let me get out my pencil. I want to write these five down.
Yeah,
please,
operating with integrity, that a company does what it says it's going to do, that it's open and transparent. If there's a crisis, it tells me about it proactively.
Mm-hmm.
It's open and transparent in its communications, and it doesn't greenwash, and it doesn't lie to me. So that's really the key thing. I want to feel good about the company that I'm buying from or investing in. Mm-hmm. But I also want to make sure that the company's having a good economic impact. If we learned anything during the financial services meltdown, is that we have to have companies that are employing people and paying taxes. I mean, this is really important for a company to have a good an economic impact to create employment and mm-hmm. support small businesses for a bank. But also that it provides a good workplace, that it has really strong marketplace practices. So us, for a bank, for example, it's really important for banks to keep client information private and confidential and treat information security as utmost importance. So I want to make sure that a company is taking a look at what its marketplace responsibilities are. Environmental sustainability is also very important. I want to make sure that the company isn't polluting, that it's trying to minimize its negative environmental impact. And then there's the community side as well. Is the company a good corporate citizen? So those five things, I want to make sure that they're doing something in all of those areas, because, in fact, you can have a good company that's putting a lot of money into the community through donations, but it might have really terrible governance. Mm-hmm. So my proxy for a good company is this. It got check marks in all those five areas, and I feel pretty comfortable with a company like that.
Where could somebody go to find some kind of a measurement like that?
Yeah, I wish there was a Good Housekeeping seal of approval that mm-hmm. operated for all companies. There really isn't. There's no silver bullet. It really depends on what you care about as a consumer and investor. But there are some proxies that we at RBC use and we pay attention to. So if a company is listed, a large company, for example, on the Dow Jones Sustainability Index, that's mm-hmm. something that they do a lot of due diligence on companies' environmental, social, and governance practices, and they take a look at our disclosure. And if a company's on that list, you can be pretty assured that it's a good company to buy from or to invest in. Mm-hmm. That's what those indices are for. I think that also, though, you may want to look at what other consumers and what your peers and colleagues say has been a good experience for them. I think you were mentioning mm-hmm. something earlier today about a local company in the Twin Cities that uses client endorsement.
Right. There's a, thanks for bringing that up. There is a company, I can't mention its name.
Yeah.
It's the something, somebody's name list. Okay, you all know who that is now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they advertise on TV, and what they do is they put on endorsements. And they illustrate them with characters and such. And what's happened is that companies that would like to be on the such and such list, I presume, collect endorsements like that, and they'll present them to that company in order to be included on that list, the point of which is to be able to say, look, this isn't just a matter of opening up the phone book and looking for, oh, let's say, a plumber. And any plumber will do. No, any plumber won't do. There's all kinds of criteria for how one would choose a plumber. One way you can choose a plumber is to have a friend or a neighbor that's had a good experience with a plumber, and they tell you who that plumber is. Another is they're included on the such and such person's list as an endorsement, and you get sort of a secondhand endorsement. We all presume that those are all true and honest endorsements, and that I presume they are, actually. It's the same way with companies. If we've got, if you're going to go to a bank and you just think any bank will do, it's just a matter of seeing which one has the best 0.8% higher interest rate on
interest
your
rate.
CD.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, we certainly know from the last 2 years how patently untrue it is that all banks are the same. They're just not. I want to say that Royal Bank of Canada, our parent of RBC Wealth Management, is ranked on a number of lists. And a few weeks ago, I read that list. It took me about a minute to get through it, and I probably didn't get all of them. The idea here is that the bank's lending practices make a huge difference in my view, as to whether or not I'd want to bank there, but also whether or not I'd want to invest in that company. And then we talked about the lending practices and how important that is. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, one of the key material things that investors care about with financial services companies is that is your bank lending to?
Mm-hmm.
And so right now, environmental issues are really on the forefront with social responsible investors. So they want to make sure that we're not lending to quote unquote dirty borrowers, that we're lending to organizations that are not, companies that aren't going to be facing any operational risk because of poor environmental practices. And they feel as though one of the bank's real responsibility is taking a good look at who we're lending to.
Right. Well, that's so important today. I mean, it's changed everything from what our recent experience has been in the United States. I don't know. Was it the same way in Canada?
in terms of the
The no down, and the fixed and low interest rate for 5 years and the balloon and all that stuff.
No, generally speaking, Canadian banks didn't offer those products, the subprime mortgages. We were not involved in that business, so you find that Canadian banks were very, very strong and came out, I'm not going to say unscathed, but with great integrity. I think we read something in the National Canadian newspaper. Oliver Stone was shooting a movie in our capital markets office in New York City, and I think he called Canadian banks faultless or something like that. I can't quite recall the adjective that he used. High praise.
Yeah, I did see that. I did see that news item. That was very interesting. Well, the Canadian banking system, I think it was in the fourth quarter of 2008, was ranked as the number one strongest system in the world. And that had a lot to do with their lending practices, clearly. I'm going to talk in another show about community banking and thinking about where the money goes that you put in your checking account and deposit and what difference that makes in the world. And we'll come back and talk about that another time. Meanwhile, we're going to take another break. Lynn, can you stay for the next segment with us?
Yep, happy to stay.
Thanks very much. And this is Mike Mullins, the host of the Socially Responsible Investing Show. We'll be right back. Mike Mullins here, financial consultant with RBC Wealth Management. Are you hoping for a comfortable retirement? Are you worried that you may not be able to afford one? Do you want to know if you're headed in the right direction so you can afford a comfortable retirement? Well, you and I need to have a visit. I have created a very focused strategy and technique called Wealth Building to Wealth Spending, the story of your life. My approach can help you ensure that you are on the right track. Call me, Mike Mullins, at 612-371-7859, 612-371-7859, for a free one-page summary of my strategy, Wealth Building to Wealth Spending, the story of your life. You can also email your request to michael.w.mullins, M-U-L-L-I-N-S, at rbc.com, and together we can create peace of mind for you and your household. Give me a call today. RBC is a division of RBC Capital Markets, member NYSE, FINRA, SIPC. Mike Mullins back again. The music you're listening to is provided by Laura Caviani, and you can find her music at lauracaviani.com, lauracaviani.com. While I'm at it, I want to mention a couple of other sponsors. We have Dunn Brothers Coffee Shop by the library in Eden Prairie. It is a great place to have meetings, get together with folks, go read the newspaper. They've got a couple of computers there. You can sit down and you can get online and look for stuff if you like. And they're good people. Ken and Sharon are good friends of ours. We've done a seminar over there a couple weeks ago. We'll be doing another one in the middle of August on alternative energy, by the way, and I'll talk more about that in the future. Thanks to Ken and Sharon for being good sponsors of the show. Also, Claude Chenard, Wizard Academy in Eden Prairie, specializes in all areas of tutoring and education, especially mathematics and English. It's good for people for whom English is not the first language in their household. A great place to get tutoring there and have some work done. Claude Chenard, thank you very much, Claude, for being a sponsor. And now, my name is Mike Mullins, if I didn't say that, the host of the Socially Responsible Investing Show, which is what you're listening to. And our guest today is Lynn Patterson, the Director of Corporate Responsibility for RBC in Toronto. She oversees the company's global corporate responsibility strategy and is considered to be one of the top experts internationally, speaking and panelist at national and international sustainability conferences around the world, and was also a member of the Board Advisory Committee on Sustainability for the Vancouver 2010 Olympic Games. That must have been quite the experience, Lynn.
It was life-changing. It was one once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, no question about it.
That's fabulous. I wish I had. I watched them. I think I watched virtually everything this year.
It was kind of addictive.
It really was. It was also very, 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 well, because it was so entertaining. I mean, it was great. It was extremely well done.
Well, and in fact, from my work on the Sustainability Council, there were lots of stories behind the stories in terms of the environmental sustainability of the venue and the governance and the all the programs that they had. I mean, I learned so much from it.
Did you find, now that we're on the topic of the Olympics, did you find that, selecting vendors and people that would provide the products and services for the Olympics, that were they screened?
Absolutely they were. Mm-hmm. And supplier chain management, you know what, just during the break I was thinking, oh, I didn't mention that that's an increasingly important expression of a company's responsibility and an organization like the Vancouver Games responsibility is how to make sure that your supply chain is responsible as well, because a company can have an effect in how it spends its money with suppliers. So absolutely, and in fact, the Vancouver Games did a lot of purchasing through small businesses in the British Columbia area and the First Nations communities as well, which is really a critical component of that economy there.
Now, there are a lot of people, I think, that are suspicious of the whole idea of, you know, what's the word we want? Making an appearance of doing the right thing. You talked about greenwashing. That may be a term that people aren't familiar with, but it's the idea here that you're just doing things for appearance's sake. How do we know the difference between somebody that's doing that and a sincere, honest attempt?
Well, I always think greenwashing is the difference between what a company says and what a company does.
Ah, sure.
It's the gap between what a company says and what it does. So, mm-hmm. I read an example of a large company that was talking about, it's an arms manufacturer and it makes bullets. And they were proclaiming some of their bullets environmentally sustainable because they were low carbon. And I thought, wow, that doesn't feel responsible to me at all, because that's actually a product that kills people.
That would be a good example of greenwashing. There's a less polite phrase that a person maybe is thinking right now.
Well, I don't even want to know what that is. But, yeah, the difference between what a company says and what it does. So sometimes car manufacturers talk, they can be more green than they used to be. But, you know, a car isn't really a green product.
No, really, it's not. Yeah. We've got a couple of different things, different directions we could go here, Lynn. I think what I want to do is talk about the Corporate Social Responsibility Monitor. This was a Canadian edition. It was from 2009. It was the results from 2009. And this was a survey that was conducted by telephone first part of 2009 with a representative sample of 1,000 adult Canadians. Now, people may say, yes, but we're Americans. How does that relate? Well, you can tell me what you think, Lynn. You're a Canadian. Do our views between America and Canada on these issues correlate at all?
Well, in fact, the Monitor is a global survey product, and I sent you the Canadian version, but in fact, they've got data from 20-some countries around the world. And I'm looking at some of the data right now, and Canada and the United States aren't identical, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. Our cultures are different, and the role of government and business, we think of them as different. But by and large, the results are very close, within 5 or 10 points between Canada and the United States on most of the metrics in the report. So, for example, I'm taking a look here at some data on how consumers in Canada feel as though they've got a say or any power in making a change in how a company behaves. Mm-hmm. And Canadians, 84% of Canadians say, yeah, I feel like I can really make a difference in how a company behaves. Americans, 76% that were surveyed said
that's
that.
That's not a huge difference. No. In this report, in fact, Canadian consumers are among the most empowered in the world when it comes to shaping corporate behavior towards corporate social responsibility, or CSR. Furthermore, Canadians continue to be at the forefront of a global trend of increasing consumer activism. As expectations of companies to be responsible by their own accord are declining in Canada, and I think here too, people instead put pressure on companies by choosing to support those that are responsible while punishing those perceived to be irresponsible. And Canadians are increasingly convinced that this is one way they can make a difference in how responsibly companies behave. Lynn, what are some of the factors driving corporate responsibility at companies?
Oh, well, that's a big question. I think that definitely the environmental movement has affected everyone, and I credit Al Gore with a lot of this, that definitely the environmental issues were raised to the forefront in terms of people's purchasing decisions.
All right.
And we find that with this survey, this GlobeScan 2009 survey, that Canadians in particular are really trying to do ethical consuming in grocery stores. So, for example, the purchase of fair trade products like fair trade coffee, purchasing food that is healthier. There are certain grocery store chains in Canada, for example, that have special lines of product that have to do with healthy heart type products, low cholesterol, or sustainably sourced materials, so sustainable fish products and seafood products. Those are increasingly popular lines.
So it really goes beyond political correctness, clearly. There are concerns certainly having to do with the regulatory environment, with the regulators. You know, some companies, it seems, will wait until somebody passes a law before they really step up and appear to do the right thing. And at that point, you just wonder if it's political correctness or not. But there are some companies that try to stay out ahead of that curve, correct?
Absolutely, and you know, one of the most interesting companies to watch, and I love watching them, is Walmart. And this survey of Canadians shows that the survey asked consumers, what's the most responsible company you can think of? Walmart, number one, top of the list. And they also asked, what's the least responsible company you can think of? Walmart, top of the list. Really very, very interesting. I might have mentioned this on your last show. Sorry to repeat myself.
No, you didn't, actually. You didn't.
Yeah. But Walmart is doing some very interesting things in terms of greening its supply chain. It's come up with a sustainability index for its supply chain. And in fact, Walmart, I think, has the potential to really change the world in many ways because it's got such purchasing power.
Right.
So that if it says to a supplier, we want to make sure that the paper is sourced responsibly, that there's less packaging, that we're able to ship merchandise in a more energy efficient manner, that we're going to be more responsible with our lights and our energy in our retail shops. This really has the power to make a really significant change.
Well, and I've heard that, and they really do show themselves to be trend leaders in the industry in this area, in the area of retail stores. I think I've mentioned this before on a show some weeks ago, that the electrical use in America, 40% is generated by commercial buildings.
Isn't that amazing? And, and all I can think of right now is all that energy is generated using water. So whenever you hear about energy use, there's a water connection somewhere to it.
There definitely is. Well, and so the idea that that you can have activity leaders, not just thought leaders, such as the what we're talking about here. You are a thought leader when it comes to these topics on corporate social responsibility. But then you've got activity leaders. I don't know what else to call it. But companies like you mentioned Walmart, but there are other companies like that. We've got a great local corporation here that's making tremendous strides in a variety of areas, just across the board, everything from, as you say, from the kinds of vendors, and really putting out the word to their vendors and saying, here's what we're going to require. You're going to have to conform with these guidelines, or else we'll find somebody else to buy our products or services from.
And you know, unless you look for some of this information, you might not know that a company that you work with or that you shop at actually does stuff like that. So go on a company's website and take a look under sustainability or corporate responsibility. You may find that the company that you're dealing with does a ton of stuff that's just invisible to you because it's just not apparent to a regular consumer at the at the storefront level.
Now we're getting down to the last couple minutes here, but a huge area here that we didn't touch on as much is the area of governance, so-called. I mean, this is where a company actually takes its values and puts them into practice. We're talking about that with Walmart. But as in looking at some of these reports, I see that there are several areas that we'd like to see companies talking about going on their website, be more clear and be more transparent in their reporting, especially in their annual reports. These would be things like their water use, their energy consumption, their other basic commodity consumption, depending on what they're making. If they're a gold jewelry company, where they source their gold from is really important. The gold mining is the dirtiest mining process in the world, uses a lot of poisonous chemicals, etc. And so that kind of an idea of what when you can look on a company's website, you want to see what they're doing with their water responsibility, correct?
Absolutely.
And what else?
Water,
energy use?
Paper, any consumption of natural resources, those are things you may want to look at. If you're concerned about human rights, you may want to take a look about the workplace practices or pay or the pension fund that the company's got in place. You really want to make sure that the company supports local communities. You want to check what kind of donations that they give.
Right.
Product safety, very important. A company like Toyota, I expect that they're going to have a lot of stuff about product safety on their website.
Oh, yeah.
Try to reassure the consumers.
Absolutely. Well, Lynn, I mean, what we've just talked about today, I'm not going to run out of topics for this show for about 4 years.
You know,
there's plenty to do on this area. Lynn, thank you so much for being our guest. Lynn Patterson is the Director of Corporate Responsibility for RBC. We're speaking to her on the phone from Toronto this morning. And I wish you all the best, Lynn. Thank you very much for being here. And we will be back in a couple minutes.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
Thank you. Mike Mullins here, financial consultant with RBC Wealth Management. Are you hoping for a comfortable retirement? Are you worried that you may not be able to afford one? Do you want to know if you are headed in the right direction so you can afford a comfortable retirement? We need to have a visit, you and me. I've created a very focused strategy and technique, wealth building to wealth spending, the story of your life. My approach can help you ensure that you are on the right track. Call me, Mike Mullins, at 612-371-7859, 612-371-7859, for a free one-page summary of my strategy, Wealth Building to Wealth Spending, the story of your life. You can also email your request to michael.w.mullins, M-U-L-L-I-N-S, at rbc.com. Together, we can create peace of mind for you and your household. Call today. RBC Wealth Management is a division of RBC Capital Markets, member NYSE, FINRA, SIPC. Mike Mullins, the host of the Socially Responsible Investing Show, back with you for segment four of today's topic, talking about responsible companies, companies that are working to do the right thing to be good corporate citizens in four areas: the areas of feeling their commitment to their customers, feeling their commitment, expressing their commitment to their employees, their commitment to be good stewards of the environment, and their commitment to good corporate governance. You know, I want to talk about fear for a minute. Not our favorite topic to talk about, but something that all of us live with every single day. Some of us fret more than some others, but all of us, I think, have a certain amount of trepidation amounting to sometimes a fear about corporate America. We see things happening in the news. We have a certain oil spill and a certain large international company in the news. Seems like every 20 seconds there's another story about that company. And it makes us afraid of investments as well. It makes us worry that, gosh, if I own this stock, you know, what happens? It might go down. We worry about what seems to be this volatility that's baffling. It's hard to understand. I mean, people can explain to us what the reason is, but it still feels like something that's not predictable, and it leaves us with a sense of powerlessness and a sense of lack of control. Certainly, there are some things that we can do, and this is common sense stuff, ladies and gentlemen. There are ways to have some power and have a return to sanity when it comes to feeling that you have some control over your life and your environment. You need to know yourself a bit. You probably know yourself pretty well. You maybe haven't asked yourself the question lately, what your values are. This is important. You need to know where you're going, where you want to go, how you want to live when you retire. You need to have a philosophy about the use of your money. Investing is not just about money. Investing is in your family. Investing is in your community. Investing is in yourself, in your physical health, your moral health, your intellectual health. You need to exercise your brain, we all know. And you need to create a plan for how you're going to pull these things together. You need to understand corporate America a bit. You need to understand where the leverage is that will allow you to feel that you can make a difference and to actually make a difference, and that you can actually help companies improve. That's what we've been talking about on the show today. Which brings me to the point of, what is the point of investing? Seems like commonsensical, doesn't it? Make money. Sure, you need to make money so that you can meet your goals. Hopefully you've got a plan, or you're going to create a plan. Give me a call, and we'll create a plan with you, and now you'll have some goals, and now you need to make money with your investments. Is that what investing in securities is all about? Making money? Investing your money so that you get a good, strong return? Because if that's all there is, I'm sure there are ways for us to meet some criminals. Oh, let's say drug dealers, People involved in prostitution, maybe gun running in third world countries, that kind of stuff. They make great money. We all know this, right? What's that you say? That doesn't match your values? Now you're getting my point. The point is that you need to identify what your values are and believe and start to look for ways that you can empower your money to do well with your investments at the same time that you do some good. Now, I had a conversation with a friend of mine a couple of days ago, and he's in the same business I'm in, on the vendor side. And he was asking me about how the show is going, and we had a nice chat. And he said, so what is the difference? Can you define for me what a responsible company is and what's an irresponsible company? Well, yeah, that's hard to define because, well, let's just take irresponsible companies. Irresponsible companies aren't going to put on their website, by the way, we're an irresponsible company. We don't care about people or our products or our consumers. We just want to make money. I mean, nobody would want to have anything to do with that company. And those kinds of companies, by the way, you don't need to look for them. They show up on the evening news on a regular basis. So let's take our energy and let's be positive and let's look for responsible companies, companies that are doing good things, making the world a better place in these four areas, for their consumers or customers, for their employees, for their environment, and for the company itself. You know, we want to have companies making money because that's what makes their stock go up. But that's not all anymore. We've been talking about how important the perception is of the company, not only in the media, but by their own employees and certainly by consumers. I'm more interested in finding responsible companies who are working in a sustainable way to provide for today's needs without diminishing future generations' abilities to meet their needs. There's all kinds of applications for that. That's a paraphrase of a 1987 United Nations comment that kind of defines sustainability. You know, there are some indexes out there that Lynn mentioned, and I've talked about them before. My website, by the way, is michaelwmullins.com. Michaelwmullins.com, and you can find on the homepage a phrase that says, listen to Mike live on AM 950. You can see on your computer that it's highlighted. Click that link. It will take you to the AM 950 webpage that has a long list, getting longer every week, of shows that we have made available for podcasting. You can find topics that you're interested in, listen to a show again. I have three summaries on there that summed up previous shows. That can be a good way to get a flavor for kind of the flow of how things go. There's also a tab called Responsible Investing on the left side. If you go on the homepage, you'll read it. It says Responsible Investing. If you click on that, you'll see I have several links laid out. One is the sustainability-indexes.com link. That is a list that's been around since 1999, put together by the Dow Jones Company to list companies that are viewed as the top sustainability companies in the world. We've also talked about the Global 100 Most Sustainable Companies briefly. That's something that you can put into the inquiry space on your search engine. It's called Global 100 Most Sustainable Companies, and you'll find the methodology, what they look for, and what the companies are. My company is number 71 on that list. Happy to say that. You'll see a lot of other companies around the world that you are familiar with. Have a look at that. Now, next week, we're going to talk about natural gas. Is this a socially responsible investment or not? Well, listen next week and let's talk about whether that's a socially responsible investment or not, and you'll learn a lot more. Our interview will be with one of our portfolio analysts, Dan Smith, here at RBC in Minneapolis. It's going to be a very interesting conversation, and I hope that you'll join us for that. Now, if you are interested in a seminar, I'll be having one in the middle of August. It'll be on alternative energy. And we'll be looking forward to giving you the information. This is Mike Mullins, the host of the Socially Responsible Investing Show, and we're out.